All right, welcome, welcome. This is the Reproductive Justice Implementing a Statement of Conscience workshop. So if that's not what you were looking for, I will not be offended if you run away right now. And if it wasn't what you're looking for, but it sounds awesome, you are welcome to stay. So welcome, welcome. This, again, Reproductive Justice Implementing a Statement of Conscience, number 234. And we are recording this for folks who can't be here right now. So we're going to make sure that we try to speak into the microphones as much as possible. And later when we're doing more talking back to the group, we've got a handheld mic. But just so you're aware, we're going to try to talk into the microphones as much as possible. Now, my name is Reverend Caitlin Cotter. I'm one of the commissioners on the Commission for Social Witness. We oversee the social witness process that happens here at General Assembly and the two major parts of that are the CSAIs, or Congregational Study Action Issues, and the Actions of Immediate Witness. So what we're talking about today is one of the things that came out of our Congregational Study Action Issue process, and that was voted in Phoenix, would have been about 5 years ago now. For those of you who remember, what happened there is we had a few different things that we had to choose between what we were going to focus on, and that one carried the day. And then from that, a study guide was developed that went out to congregations, and different congregations picked it up at different times, and people talked about it and reflected and did action, and we collected all those little nuggets, we on the Commission for Social Witness, and we drafted a statement of conscience. 2 summers ago, and then we sent that draft out to partners, and they gave us some edits, and then we brought it to the General Assembly, and we got more edits, a lot more edits, and we stayed up late at night incorporating edits, and then it went before the body, and that is the piece of paper that we just handed out to you, is the result of all of that work. So 4 years of work for those five pages that you got. And if you didn't get a copy, if you got some more, we can hand out there. Thanks, Shay. And I just wanted you to look with me at that for just a minute, because that's what we're going to be talking about today, is that document and how it lives in us and in our communities. Sorry, I thought someone was trying to get in. We got one more up here who needs one. We got some more hints there. Oh, and right there. All right. It looks like we made just about the right number of copies. So go team. Now, I'm not going to read this whole thing out loud to you, because that would not be a good use of our time together. But I do want to call your attention to some pieces of it, some of this very carefully crafted language, especially that first sentence. I think really it's the first sentence because it sums everything up, right? As Unitarian Universalists, we embrace the reproductive justice framework, which espouses the human right to have children, not to have children, to parent the children one has in healthy environments, and to safeguard bodily autonomy and to express one's sexuality freely. So that's really what reproductive justice is all about, and what the CSAI is all about. So obviously the history of this is in there, that it was created by women of color in 1994 to center the experiences of the most vulnerable and to bridge the gap between reproductive rights and other social justice movements. We wanted to be clear how interconnected so many of these things are: racial justice and environmental justice and children's rights, and so many things are in reproductive justice, right? Once you start really sinking your teeth into it. So there's lots of stuff in here. I urge you to look through. Again, lots of thought went into all of this language, so please read it. We spent lots of hours on it. Selfishly, I hope you can dig into it. We really wanted to emphasize those things. We wanted to emphasize our faith tradition, long history of progressive witness, and that as participants in the reproductive justice movement, Unitarian Universalists commit to follow the lead of, act in solidarity with, and be accountable to communities of color and other marginalized groups. So that's a really key piece. And obviously this is all grounded in our theology, and you can read about that if you want to. And then we get to the part of it that's all about the actions. right? So there's all kinds of different ways that people can be doing reproductive justice as individuals, in our relationships, in our congregations, and as an association. And there's, you know, obviously some long lists here of different ways that people can and people have gotten involved with this. So, with all of that said, we have a fabulous intern here, the intern for reproductive justice, who's going to give us a little bit of an update on what's happening around the country with Unitarian Universalists and reproductive justice. And we are so glad to have her with us today. Can we give her a round of applause as she steps up here?
Good afternoon. I have had the privilege of getting to work as the UU Women's Federation Clara Barton intern for this past year. My name is Shia French. And so as part of that, I've been hearing stories about our denomination's process and what UUs around the country are doing to work on reproductive justice. I've also been talking with some of our partners, including Sister Song, the Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice, the National Council of Jewish Women, Strong Families, and many others. I've also had the opportunity to work on projects like working with the Texas Justice Ministry to find lawyers who could represent young people seeking abortion in Texas. And we've been super gratifying calling up UUs in Texas and having people be willing to show up the next day at a training to figure out how to do this important work. So, reproductive rights is in our DNA as Unitarian Universalists, that coming from the Women's Alliance at the First Unitarian Church of Dallas, supporting Roe v. Wade, going through the Texas court systems, to Unitarian Universalists being some of the founding members of the Reproductive Coalition of Reproductive Choice, which is a faith organization that works in D.C. On reproductive justice, reproductive issues. We have many examples in our history of how we've shown up for reproductive rights. And another part of our history is that we've been involved in and inspired by science of like the 18th and 19th centuries and 20th centuries, and some of that science has included the pseudoscience of eugenics. And so we have, and some of our amazing Unitarian and Universalist heroes, including Clarence Russell Skinner, who Skinner Books is named after, have supported eugenics. In The Social Implications of Universalism, he wrote, "The new enthusiasm for humanity readily pictures a time when through eugenics, education, friendship, play, worship, and work, the criminal will be no more, because the misdirection of the human nature will cease." It's painful to read that our history includes both things that were like incredibly wonderful in how we've stood up for reproductive rights and also things that have really hurt people. And so how do we get to a place where, in addition to all of that kind of history, we have also been the first faith to really take reproductive justice seriously? As Caitlin has sort of talked about, reproductive, and as you can read in the second paragraph of the statement in front of you, that reproductive justice started as a movement by women of color who were sick and tired of the reproductive choice community ignoring and not understanding the barriers that were in place for them that weren't issues for middle-class white women. Issues like children being taken from Native American families because they were deemed not fit to parent. Issues that include the forced sterilization of many many people of color, many disabled people, and still continues in some of the ways that policies are thought about today. So how did we get to this place where we as Unitarian Universalists have adopted reproductive justice through our alliance with Sister Song? I want to tell you a little bit about the First Unitarian Society of Ridgewood. They're located in Ridgewood, New Jersey, and is a congregation of about 200 people. And the Reproductive Choice Committee there started out, like many committees in our congregations do, with one person who really wanted to make a change and was asking, who's with me? In 2000, with the election of George Bush, Carol Lascalzo was hysterical and really afraid that we were going to lose reproductive choice in this country. And so she started the Reproductive Choice Committee at the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood. And in the beginning, in early days, they did things like showing up for the March for Women's Lives in 2004 and hosting a speaker to talk about international family planning, posting an ad in the local paper about commemorating the Roe anniversary. And at some point within that, at a committee meeting, one of the members asked, there must be women in New Jersey who can't afford abortion. And so they put together a panel of people from different abortion clinics and also who worked with low-income people in New Jersey and started a conversation about abortion, about having an abortion fund. And around that time, Mandy Restivo Walsh heard about the abortion fund panel and started coming to the meetings, and she would later become one of the co-chairs of the committee. In around 2006, they joined with the Anti-Racism Committee to read Undivided Rights, Women of Color, Organize for Reproductive Justice, which I highly recommend. And through that, they were inspired by the vivid stories of scrappy grassroots organizations fighting for the rights of Native American children to live with their parents, for healing spaces for Black women, for legislative changes that reflect the lived experiences of women of color. This was an approach to reproductive work that encompassed the complexity and full humanity of people making decisions about children. And so around that time, they started talking about, well, maybe we should change the name of our committee to Reproductive Justice instead of Reproductive Choice. And one of the people who was attending the joint anti-racism and reproductive choice sessions was Margaret White, who was the anti-racism chair. And she said, hold on a sec, you shouldn't just go about changing the name until you've really talked with some of the women of color who have started this movement of reproductive justice, and until you have, you know, have examined kind of what is the work that you're doing really reflective of the full concept of reproductive justice. And so Margaret White introduced Carol and Mandy and the committee to Dr. Lynn Roberts, who is still a board member of Sister Song. And they had a number of meetings and Lynn Roberts talked with the group about kind of what they were working on and how they could better have the work of the committee reflect the principles of reproductive justice, that people have a right to have children, to not have children, to raise those children in safe and healthy environments, and to express their sexuality and bodily autonomy freely. And so through those kind of conversations, this led to them continuing to work on the abortion fund, which started in 2008 and now gives grants to 100 people in New Jersey who otherwise wouldn't be able to afford an abortion, and also to continue working a lot of education efforts. And that they were so inspired by this work of like reproductive justice and being part of this movement that they wanted to bring it to the rest of our faith. And so, as Caitlin talked about, that in 2012, we voted on reproductive justice as a congregational study action issue, and then went through the long process of like drafting a resolution, which passed last year. And this past year has been the year of implementation for reproductive justice. And one of the things that I wanted to highlight is that maybe a little bit different than some of our other CSAIs is that through this process, Sister Song was a partner in coming up with the language, and like much of the language went back and forth with Sister Song to make sure that we were getting it right and that we were expressing the full principles of reproductive justice. And then, so since then, the UUA created a curriculum, which some of you may have taken. In 2013, there were 25 congregations who responded to a survey saying that they had taken the curriculum, and I'm sure there are way more than that. And I wanted to tell you a little bit about where we are today with reproductive justice, reproductive rights, and reproductive choice work. So in the last several months, I started gathering stories and descriptions to create this map of our reproductive justice, reproductive choice, and reproductive rights work. And I intentionally kind of divide them up because I think that we're in different places in our understanding of reproductive justice as a concept and also in kind of how our work represents that. And I will type in my password.
Something very exciting, clearly. I also just want to say there's a long history of us having technical difficulties at reproductive justice workshops, so we just wanted to uphold that fine tradition today. That would be great. Rob, would you want to
be absolutely clear this is not a technical difficulty?
This is, yeah, not yet. All right, there we go. So this is as much of the map as we're going to be able to see, I'm afraid.
Which is all right, because the map is also not entirely complete. I'm sure that there are some of you sitting here today who don't see a dot for where your reproductive justice work is happening. Thank you, Caitlin. And I have little slips of paper if you would love to be able to put your reproductive justice work on the map if you'd like to fill them out at the end. I'll be updating it next week. Yes. Awesome. And so I just wanted to highlight a few of the things that are on this map. Earlier this year, I'm sure you all heard about the tragic shooting at the Planned Parenthood in Colorado Springs. And the minister, Reverend Nori Roast, gained national media attention, holding a vigil and in support of the Planned Parenthood and was around for when it reopened again this past spring. Similarly, the Reverend Darcy Baxter recently planned a prayer vigil in Modesto when a flaming gas canister was thrown through the window of the Modesto Planned Parenthood. We have many of our ministers who are standing up for reproductive justice and talking at vigils, talking to the press, and like talking about what we're doing as a faith for reproductive justice. I'd also like to lift up that the Texas UU State Network, led by Reverend Chuck Freeman, has founded the Texas Faith Voices for Reproductive Justice, which is a coalition of Christian, Jewish, and UU ministers and advocates. And Reverend Maddie Caballero and Reverend Freeman are now serving on the advisory board. And what they're doing is that they're creating a story curriculum about reproductive issues and having that be taught at more moderate churches with the interfaith partners. The technology does not seem to be with us today. I'd also like to tell you about that the Michigan State Network, led by Randy Block, has recently held an interfaith conference in May that was attended by about 65 people, and was talking about how we can lobby from a faith perspective. And Randy was kind enough to leave me with some of the folders and resources from that workshop. I have the red folders up here, and feel free to, at the end, if you're interested, to come up and take one. Also, the Michigan State Network has been working on the lead poisoning crisis in Flint, Michigan, and talking about how that is a reproductive justice issue as well. Here in Ohio, we have the Justice Ministry being very active in blocking a number of restrictive legislation that's been going through. And we also have the First UU Church of Columbus, which held an empowerment workshop for reproductive justice in 2013 and has been working on writing letters to legislators and also teaching the curriculum on reproductive justice. We have the UU Women's Federation with affiliated minister Reverend Marty Keller working on national policy around reproductive rights and justice and serving on national boards, including the Religious Advocates Working Group. The Women's Federation is also responsible for inviting Cecile Richards and Monica Simpson to come to this GA, and that workshop is in the next session. Many of our congregations are fighting restrictive legislation, fighting for a higher minimum wage, administering abortion funds, being escorts at Planned Parenthood. I'm very pleased that we have two representatives from a congregation in New Orleans to talk about their work today.
So we wanted to do something a little different with this workshop today. We're really, really delighted that we could have Shai's presentation to give us kind of an overview of all of the history and the things that are happening right now. You can see all these things happening in the map. And then we're going to do some conversations. But before we go into that, I wanted to ask if there were any questions about the statement of conscience, about CSAIs, or about something that's been said so far. All right.
You mentioned Sister Song a lot, and can you just tell me at least who they are?
All right, so we have a question about who Sister Song is. That's a great question.
Yeah. Sorry, I thought that had gone out earlier. So Sister Song is an organization that founded out of some of the first conversations on reproductive justice, and they hold a national network of reproductive justice organizations. They're based out of Atlanta, Georgia, and their director is Monica Simpson, who will be speaking here. Exactly.
Yes, so there was a question. Yes, Monica Simpson will be at the next. So hold that question. Go to the next thing. Learn more. All right. Yes. Other question.
You also mentioned a curriculum. What is the name of that curriculum?
Yeah, do you have the name of that curriculum on the tip of your tongue there?
I think it's just the Reproductive Justice Curriculum. If you Google UUA Reproductive Justice Curriculum, you'll get it.
Yeah. So it was a curriculum or a study guide? There's a new curriculum.
Study guide.
There's a study guide that's out there, and then there's some other curriculum.
I'm Jane Larson from the First UU Church here in Columbus, and we did the curriculum. You mentioned our Justice Action Ministry. Our church voted on reproductive justice. Well, voted on women's health issues as a task force in 2012, knowing that this was going to come up, so we'd be including reproductive justice, and also on another task force on poverty, which of course is intertwined.
Right, got a question for us, Jane?
And so what I was wondering is how many churches have used the curriculum, because we did, and it's really great.
I think we heard definitively that 25, is that the right number?
25 as of 2013, and then we don't have data past that.
Right. So we know it's been used by way more than that 25, and especially since that data stopped 3 years ago. But at least 25, and definitely more. But that's not something we tracked past that moment when we needed to know how it was going. So now it's just out there as a resource, floating in the wonderful ether. Great. So Knoxville is going to be doing it in the fall. All right. Any other questions about what was just presented, real quick, and then we want to get into some other stuff.
Since I'm unclear about what the PennDOT things were, I don't know what they represent.
Those represent places where. So that was a great question about what the. So for those of you who are listening to this recording, we're looking at a map with little dots on it, and those dots represent people who've told our reproductive justice intern they're doing reproductive justice work. So those are places in the country where we know for sure exciting stuff is happening. All right, so we'll have some more space for questions later. But I wanted to ask our two people from New Orleans to be ready to speak up. Basically, what we wanted to do with the rest of our time is have some space for us to talk to each other about reproductive justice, about the statement of conscience, and specifically what challenges and excites us about reproductive justice and the reproductive justice statement of conscience. So we invited two people from New Orleans who are going to introduce themselves to model that conversation for us. And then we're going to have some breakouts around the room. So if you want to be looking around the room thinking about who you don't know you'd like to talk to,
while you're listening to them. That might be a good idea. All right, so, guys, what excites and challenges you about the Reproductive Justice Statement of Conscience?
Well, thank you, Caitlin. And why don't you hand that microphone to Jody for a couple of minutes? We're going to take about 10 minutes to tell you some about who we are and why we agreed to model this and answer to this question. I'm Shafia Christos-Rogers, and I'm one of Caitlin's co-commissioners on the Commission on Social Witness, and I'm also a longtime member of First Unitarian Universalist Church of New Orleans. And my whatever you want.
I'm Jody Manali. I'm the current president of the First Unitarian Universalist Church of New Orleans, and I organized our UU Voices for Reproductive Freedom group in 2014.
So I will say first that what got our attention on this was that in July 2014, many of you probably heard that during our Sunday morning worship, we were invaded by people who came looking like they were attending church, but there were about 40 people inside the church who interrupted our worship by telling us that we needed to get saved because we were because of our pro-choice work. They didn't say it that way, but being generous, that's how we experienced it, and it was quite traumatic for us. That pushed us in a very deep and powerful way to really return to work that we had not been pushed on in a long time. And that was we'd had decades of work in New Orleans and Baton Rouge as well, because there had been these sieges by a group called Operation Rescue, where thousands of people who were basically fundamentalist evangelists who were anti-choice would come to our cities and just siege on abortion clinics, on women's health clinics, for like a couple of weeks. And what that did was it really mobilized organizations that were strongly pro-choice. And so that was what the reproductive freedom movement in the city that we were familiar with, that was a lot of what it was centered around. There was a lot of clinic defense work and a lot of legislative work that was focused very, very specifically on abortion. And that was important work, but it wasn't very comprehensive. And there was a disconnect, a real disconnect, because most of that work was dominated by white people, and especially white women. But there were there were factions within those groups. But that was basically who was most deeply involved in the conversation. Jody, you wanna?
If you're going to stand, I guess I'll stand. Okay.
I just thought everybody can see our faces if we stand.
Okay. We came late. Our congregation came late to the CSAI. Okay. Our congregation came late to the CSAI process based on responding in 2014. So when we wanted to resume our work, we knew that we needed some enlightenment, and we turned to the UUA and the Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice, RCRC. The reason that I suggested we turn to RCRC is partly because of my own history. I was a member of the Pensacola UU Fellowship in the 1990s when we had two abortion doctors killed 2 years in a row. And in the second year when the abortion doctor was killed, we also had an escort killed and an escort wounded, who were both members of the Pensacola UU Fellowship, Jim and June Barrett, and to their memory here. Let's see. So we found the curriculum. We found the curriculum on the UUA website, and we figured out that we needed to kind of take a step back before we went forward, and needed to learn about what the reproductive justice framework was, because we really didn't know. I also want to give a shout out to Reverend Rob Keithan, who helped us learn about the statement of conscience and where we were in the process of working on that with his UUs for RJ Yahoo group that he moderates. I had the good fortune of listening in on a few conversations with UUs around the country who were working very hard on that, and thank you all for that. That was a good education for us. But anyway, what inspired us from the statement of conscience and the reproductive justice framework is that it's comprehensive. It focuses on systemic racism and the experiences and issues of women of color, and encourages all white UUs to work as allies with women of color-led organizations. Also, it helped us really think about what liberation requires beyond access to safe, affordable abortions and health care for women, things such as a living wage, equal pay for women, safe, affordable housing, affordable child care, the whole gamut of issues that our sisters in the Coalition of Sister Song and locally raised to help us be more aware of the broader context of reproductive justice.
So there were some really specific principles that becoming a part of reproductive justice caused us to wrestle with. And so in terms of, like, we're going to ask you in a few minutes to talk about your inspirations and your challenges in doing this work. And if you're not already doing it, then talk with someone who is and really listen to what's going on with them and their congregations. So in terms of inspiration and challenge, this notion of a more comprehensive approach, it pushed us on what does it mean to do reproductive freedom, reproductive justice work in an anti-oppressive way, in an anti-racist way, in a way that is and centered on our broadest humanity. And in doing that, one of the things that we wrestle with is the fact that, you know, our history tells us in our community that we have a growing edge with the fact that we are white dominated in many of our congregations. In our congregation, we certainly are. And what we don't really are not well versed at is accepting leadership and direction from people of color in our community. So, for example, like, once we have this framework that Sister Song has offered, like, our challenge is, well, we can keep speaking to Sister Song, but who are the Sister Songs in our community? Where are the people of color who are working with this broad description of reproductive justice? And so part of what happened was that we started to really reach out and ask these questions, and we found that there's a group called Women with a Vision, who do work around. They certainly are concerned about choice and reproductive rights, but they're also very involved in doing things like working with sex workers to make sure that they have what they need in terms of access to all the whole range of services, from legal services to sexual health services. There's a group called FLIC that stands for Friends and Families of Louisiana's Incarcerated Children. That's another group that is dominated primarily led by people of color who are addressing the fact that there are so many youth who are incarcerated. That's part of reproductive justice. So starting to build those kinds of relationships across the lines of our tendency historically to have been sort of compartmentalized. That's been one of our challenges. To learn, really, to school ourselves on being better listeners, and from that listening, letting that help, you know, help change our agendas. So that's been a really important thing. Our ministers have participated in a coalition called Justice and Beyond, which is a coalition of ministers and lay leaders who are focused on whole family issues in the community. And so we have to look. I think part of our challenge in implementing this is, do we have relationships with diverse people who are working on the whole gamut of reproductive justice? Do we have those relationships? How do we then really step up, learn how to listen better, learn how to accept direction, and learn how to not always try to be the people setting the table, but come to the tables that maybe are set and what we've been invited to, whether we're aware of it or not. And we only become aware of it when we pay attention to what is happening with the communities of color, with the marginalized communities, with the gay community, with the trans community. Only when we listen and start to develop relationships that cross those lines can we actually really live into this idea of reproductive justice. That's, I think, some of what we're learning in our daily efforts.
Okay, we just want to show you a few photos here of some action things we've done. Piggybacking on that, one of the things we've done is we've joined three local coalitions, and one of them is called Legislative Agenda for Women. And I'll tell you, we're in Louisiana. Not only do we have a horrible legislative system, but we also are broke, like dead broke. So we had two special sessions this spring, one early fiscal session, the regular session, and a third fiscal session. So we have been involved in legislative advocacy for 3 months at least, and it's been very trying. Anyway, one of the things we did was we worked with RCRC to host a pastoral care workshop on reproductive justice. We invited ministers of color and people who work in clinics and healthcare workers. We had about 15 people attend. This was important because it looked at not only issues of pre-abortion counseling and that sort of thing, but counseling about what happens when your baby dies, what happens when your children die, how to do counseling with these people. And we've had so many children of color killed, innocent bystanders in gunfire in New Orleans, that this is a really big deal for us. Let's see. What you're looking at there is we're working with a nonprofit called Days for Girls. Days for Girls makes menstrual kits for young women around the world. Did you know that there are many young girls in developing countries, third world countries, however you like to refer to them, who miss several days of school every month because they have no feminine hygiene products? This is making them from cloth. It's putting them in Ziploc bags so that they can wash them out in the stream or wherever they need to wash them and so on. Anyway, you can find it online at Days for Girls. Okay, and then the third one, Shia, was at the SCOTUS rally in March. We joined with our, no, that wasn't it, but anyway, that's us. That's our group. When the case was coming up before the Supreme Court, the Texas case was coming up before the Supreme Court in March, we had a similar bill that had been passed in our state legislature, and we were there to support the folks in Texas, as well as to see whatever the outcome of that is will be similar to us about hospital admitting privileges for doctors at clinics. Thank you.
So we prepare to move to the next session. I just want to add that our true inspiration spans the whole spectrum of what we are talking about. One of our inspirations this year was Dr. Willie Parker. He came to our congregation and was also met in our community with different groups. He is an African-American women's health doctor who has been one of the only people who was doing abortion services in the state of Mississippi. And he wrote an article that we read in Esquire that talked about how he, as a Christian, understands abortion as a ministry. And I just want to say that things like that, that step out of the traditional boxes, have been part of our inspiration, and that this work, just because we expand to understand reproductive justice in a large way, doesn't mean that abortion is not still important. It means that there's many other things, including abortion. But to understand it as a ministry, abortion as a ministry, for that, that shifts our ground and our inspiration. So what we want to ask you to do
yes.
You're going to do that?
So, yeah, I'm going to keep emceeing here. So at this point, we really wanted to allow space here for you to tell your stories and what you're thinking about. We just kind of threw a lot of stuff at you, stuff that's happening, stuff that people are churning with and working with in their own communities. So I want you to be thinking about what's going on where you live and your community and your religious community and your larger community. Find someone, maybe the person sitting next to you, maybe someone a little further away in the room, and I want to invite you to have a conversation with them about what is challenging and inspiring you with regards to reproductive justice. And I'm gonna time you, so I'll let you know and when that time is over, and then you'll find someone else to talk to. So you're gonna have a conversation right now. So go ahead and find someone to talk to.
All right, I'm loving all the great conversation that's happening around here. So we've got about 15 minutes in this room left before we have to give it over to the next workshop. And what I'd really love to happen right now, if you've got something coming out of your conversation that you're willing to share with everyone else, now would be a great time for that. So something that that rose up in the conversation you were having that was challenging or inspiring you. So we've got the microphone there right now, or if you can't come up to that, if you want to raise your hand, I've got the cordless mic. So anybody got something to share? You want to come up to the mic? All right.
So I'm from Texas.
I was from Texas.
In 2013.
All right.
Somebody said something, they don't have a program in place right now, and they didn't know how to get started. I would urge anyone who does not have a program to call their Planned Parenthood office. They are all over it. They've got Planned Parenthood. They are also talking reproductive justice, not reproductive rights. So they're all on board with this terminology. They've got it down. They've got tools, resources, and they can plug you into all kinds of things to do.
All right. So if you don't know what to do, call Planned Parenthood. Usually just a good statement to make all around, I feel. All right. Barbara, you got something for us?
I'm from Indiana, and I think many of you know that the right to life and the people who are challenging our reproductive rights are introducing laws in various states. Indiana is a state like some Texas and North Carolina and so on, and Florida, which is like a grassroots starting some laws that are absolutely ridiculous. Indiana's law is going into effect in just a few days, July 1st. It's bill number 1337. And those of you who don't know about the law, has several components. One of the components is that anyone who has a miscarriage or an abortion has to pay now for a burial or a cremation of the remains. And that is particularly bothersome for many, many people who have had a miscarriage, and many, many women have had a miscarriage, who have to then go through the grieving process again for a burial or remains. And it also increases the cost of those people who are having an abortion, because now you have to pay several hundred dollars for a cremation of the remains. It also is being challenged by Indiana University, who does research on fetal tissue, because they don't have any fetal tissue to do the research on anymore. So they are challenging it, and ACLU is challenging it, but that doesn't mean that it's going to be effective.
So a heartbreaking law in Indiana.
Right.
What was that number again?
1337.
So
the other part of the law makes it illegal for any physician, and I am a physician, to counsel any woman to have an abortion for a genetic abnormality or a medical abnormality. So if you have any reason that your fetus is going to be not viable for after the birth for very long because of genetic or a medical abnormality, and you tell the parent what the outcome of that pregnancy might be, even if it is born alive, and that they might want to consider abortion, then you will be criminally liable for that conversation, and you are subject to not only fines but to jail.
Right. So for those of you who couldn't hear what Barbara was saying, and thank you for that, Barbara, she's talking about how physicians could be criminally charged if they see a medical or genetic reason why a couple might consider abortion, because it would be a non-viable birth. Is that right, Barbara?
It would be a viable birth, but not a...
Oh, but they wouldn't be able to live long. Okay, yeah, great, thank you. All right, Jim, you got something for us?
Jim Cavanaugh, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. I'm active with a group. I'm trying to get off the ground. It's been around with a Facebook page, Pennsylvania Religious Coalition for Reproductive Justice. And I urge all of you to do interfaith work to mobilize people of faith in support of what we're trying to accomplish, a woman's right to make her own moral choices. Because as more people of faith come out and write to their legislators or our public, people of faith are supporting reproductive justice, then women will get the support they need, because clearly that isn't happening. And the energy in this room is good for me, because we haven't done enough in Pennsylvania anywhere near, and more states need, if you don't have a state affiliate of the National Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice, work with Planned Parenthood and the National RCRC to start your local affiliate. They will support you, they will help you, and we need more people of faith to come out of the woodwork, to come out of the closet and say, we believe in God, we are people of faith, whatever your faith statement is, but make it public.
All right, so a call for a public from people of faith and interfaith work, and the there's a national coalition for, what's that acronym again, Jim?
Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice, RCRC.
RCRC, Reproductive Coalition for Reproductive Choice?
Religious Coalition.
Yes. Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice. I'll get it one of these years. And they are a great resource if you want to start a local affiliate. So thank you, Jim.
Yes, my name is Lenore Godin, and I'm from Sun City, Arizona. Mm-hmm. And I'm a childbirth educator and have been working for 30 years on the idea that what really jumps out at me is parent the children one has in a healthy environment. And I've been worried about the healthy environment of pregnant women all these years. The issue that I have presently, and I'm still working at the hospital, is that doctors are paid at the hospital for doing tests. They're not paid to sit down and talk about lifestyle and nutrition for these expectant moms. And any veterinarian will tell you that's the first thing they look at when an animal is pregnant. So our statistics are really terrible. Our infant mortality rate has gone down because they're keeping babies alive through technology. They kept a 9-ounce baby alive in California not too long ago, which cost millions of dollars at the insistence of the parents. Now, I'm certainly for choice, very big time, but I'm also very, very interested in the babies that we do bring forth, that they're as healthy, as smart, as well-developed as possible. So I urge everybody to question when they say we're having all these preemie babies and 50% of the time we don't understand why this is. And if you want to email me, I have a card and can show you a study that shows cause and effect without any question. So anyway, that's who I am, and thank you for the time.
Okay, so some urging to support families and getting the nutrition and such they need.
Absolutely.
All right.
Can I speak
All right.
Definitely. I guess, and I think on that point, thinking about what that statement, supporting healthy environment, is partly about, is that when in a lot of, when in some communities there's a lot more environmental degradation and there's a lot more pollutants, and that to think, I think that reproductive justice has really taught me to think beyond the personal choices people are making about, like, whether they're taking drugs or whether they're, or what they're able to feed their child or what they're able to eat while pregnant, and to also think about the more structural causes that lead to those choices.
Justice. Yeah, thank you. Good point. All right. Mark, you got something for us?
Just real quick. My name's Mark Mohindro. I'm with Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist. I'm also a former employee of Planned Parenthood and current volunteer. And yes, if we can help you a lot if you don't have a lot of resources. So I'll second that thought. But one of the things, just in the conversations that I was having here, it was great seeing where other congregations were and where they were at. And I've been doing this for a while, and I know that I'm sure a lot of other people have been doing this for a while. And Shai, correct me if I'm wrong, but I know my contact information is up there on the map under Knoxville, and I'm going to be here for the entire GA. I would love to talk with any of the rest of you as far as best practices. If you have any questions, if you're not sure where to go, I also have a card. I would love to give it to you, and you can always get in touch with me, but I'm just offering that up. And I'd love to help support or, I mean, hear what you're doing in your congregations as well. All right?
All right. So we got some great resources. And Mark, are you going to be at that lunch tomorrow?
Yes, I'll be there.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. So that's an important reminder, Rob, and then I'll give you the mic, is that there's going to be a lunch tomorrow that's going to be a way to continue these conversations and connect with resources and people doing this work and talk about what you can be doing and how we can be reframing things and so on. And we've got some postcard-sized things about there. So come up, grab one of these lilac-colored things and before you leave the room and go to that lunch tomorrow. All right. Thanks, Rob. Is there a charge for lunch? I believe it is.
It's like we're going out to get, and then you go buy your own lunch.
Yeah, so the idea is that you're going to meet and go out, and everyone grabs their own food, and then conversation. So it's not a catered event, but a gathering point. And the location, Shaya?
So right outside of General Session at noon.
Okay, so everyone's going to meet right outside of General Session and then go find food together. So go to General Session and then find Shaya. All right.
Reverend Rob Keith, and I'm a community minister affiliated with All Souls Church in Washington, D.C., and also do a fair amount of consulting with Planned Parenthood, and just want to add a little bit of nuance to what some of the previous speakers said, which is that there are 70 different Planned Parenthood affiliates, and they vary widely in their understanding and commitment to reproductive justice. So there are some Planned Parenthoods that have great relationships with women of color-led organizations in the community, and there are some that have terrible relationships because they consistently cut out women of color from leadership and don't respect them. And so I want to encourage you to consider Planned Parenthood as an important ally in the community, but do your own research and make sure that you are in direct relationship with women of color-led organizations and groups and get to know the landscape. And, you know, Planned Parenthood does great work, and I love them. And they have a particular focus and a particular agenda. And make sure that you kind of know the landscape before you kind of put Planned Parenthood up on an idol, because for many women of color-led groups, it's a lot more complicated than that. So,
thank you.
Their history is just as imperfect as ours, isn't it, Rob?
I'm Jane Larson from Columbus, Ohio. But if you want to get what's really happening in Ohio legislatively, and you want a program in your Ohio church, call NARAL Pro-Choice Ohio, because they work with the women of color. And we have black people on our board, as well as and our staff. And so you're going to get a very open way of doing things. And our pastors at our First UU Church in Columbus have used NARAL to help them develop a curriculum along with our OWL. So it's, if you're so wondering who to call in Ohio, call NARAL Pro-Choice Ohio.
All right. In Ohio, call NARAL Pro-Choice Ohio. Great. Thank you for that. And we have one more, and then we're out of time, my friends.
Hi, Carol Lascalzo, Ridgewood, New Jersey. Thank you for the kind words today. I really appreciated them. I guess I just want to point out, and was happy to hear somebody here talking about worrying about children when they're born, because one of the issues that I've struggled with in working with reproductive justice is that the issue is, again, risen to the surface about abortion and lack of access, and it's huge. And I do a lot of that work, but our committee also has done a lot of work on birth and tried to do some work on birth justice and birth options for women of color. We recently had a panel on children, the effects of poverty on children and their families, within their families, and we're now working on trying to get Breakfast After the Bell programs in association with another group in New Jersey who's really taking the lead. So we try to branch out and really do pay attention to raising children in safe and healthy environments, because if we don't, we're going to be missing the whole boat on reproductive justice. And one other thing, reproductive justice has been a very natural segue for us into Black Lives Matter. Mm-hmm. So, I'll end with that. Thank you.
There we go. All right, and on that note of Black Lives Matter, I'm going to call this workshop adjourned, and there's going to be another group coming in. But again, please come grab one of these little things about the lunch tomorrow. And remember, go to general session. And thank you guys so much for coming. Please, if you have more questions about the CSW, stop by our booth.